Hello and welcome to episode 42 of the Beyond the Self podcast. I am your host, Africa. Oh, I'm so excited. I am so fucking excited about this episode. And I think I say this almost every time that I sit down to record, but I always mean it. I always mean it. And there is something so special about the conversation that we're going to have today, and it is going to go in a few different directions. So as I sit here right now, I'm not even sure what the title is going to be, but I know that we are going to be talking about intimacy and sex with and without drugs and alcohol, and I'll be sharing my personal experiences with this. But the whole point is so that maybe you can start to look at certain things in your own life if you so choose to. But I guess that's the whole point of this podcast. But I think my excitement also stems from the fact that I have been on the internet having conversations publicly for the past 6 years, and I've had this podcast for a little while now, but I've never done a full episode on sex or sexuality or sexual shame or how we can find ourselves sabotaging our sex lives, which is, I would say, at the core of the episode today, because the work that I do and have been doing for a while is wanting to really understand what drives us to make the decisions that we make, what drives us to get in our own way, which essentially, a lot of us know that self-sabotage, it doesn't happen because you just want to fuck yourself over. A lot of the time, it's because you're trying to protect yourself in ways that don't actually really make sense, in ways that are pulling you back instead of moving you forward. And I find that so fascinating, the ways that the brain will encourage you to protect yourself, even when there's proof and evidence that it's actually detrimental. So that's just what I'm fascinated with. And when it comes to sex, I would say that for me, it's one of the biggest areas in which I've sabotaged myself from a very young age, whether it's consciously or unconsciously, or just things that I have soaked in from my environment. And we'll talk about all of the things, but I think it's time. I think it's time to have this conversation. And for me, I've also noticed and accepted that my sexuality is a big part of my self-expression. And I think I've known that from a very young age. Of course, I didn't have the words that I have now as a 30-year-old woman. It feels good to say that. For whatever reason, it feels good to say that, because for me to sit here and to be recording this, and it's not a private conversation, it's a public conversation, and for me to feel so grounded and excited and calm and curious and fascinated, when before all I used to feel was shame in regards to my sexuality, it feels so fucking good. Where do we begin? Let me just have a little look at my notes, because of the many different directions we can have, we can take this conversation, I wanted to make sure that there are specific things that I put forward. And I thought the best way to do this is to just step back from the position of teacher, educator, mentor, coach, and to just share my story. A lot of you will have heard my story on other people's platforms, whether it's bits and pieces, or maybe you haven't heard it at all. But I think it's important for me to tell my own story in my own house, my own pace, my own way. So I thought the best way to do this is to talk about how my relationship with sex has changed since I got sober. But I'll also take you through just my adolescence as well, because there are a lot of key moments there that shape the person that I am now, and further highlight why this conversation for me is very, very important. And because I will be talking about alcohol and drugs quite a bit in this conversation, and obviously the main reason for that is because I am sober, I do want to emphasize that for me, this is not about trying to change your mind. Maybe that's just how I will put it, okay? This is not about me trying to place sobriety as the best option for everyone out there. This is not me trying to change your mind about drinking or not drinking or doing drugs or not doing drugs. Everyone has a different relationship and experience with mind-altering substances, okay? The only thing that I will invite you to do is to be honest about whether something is working for you or against you. Because I was lying to myself for a very, very long time. For a very long time. I was convinced that I didn't have a problem, even though the results in my life showed me otherwise. I was convinced that I could moderate or force myself to moderate. I was convinced that even though alcohol and other drugs were putting me in a position, and of course, it wasn't just that. I had my own shit mentally that I needed to fix, but you know, the pairing of of unaddressed traumas and drugs and alcohol, the results that you get in life are not exactly going to be the most supportive. So for me, something that I started to see from a very young age was compulsive sexual behavior. And I know this is the story for so many people, especially young girls, young women. I know for guys as well, but I can only speak from my experience as someone that has been a girl, someone that is a woman. It just manifests itself in very different ways. So my invitation, regardless of your sexuality, your gender, whatever it might be, is to just be very honest with yourself. So I hope that me sharing my own story can allow you to just take stock a little bit. But this is not about changing your mind or trying to place sobriety and abstinence as, you know, the pinnacle of truth, because it's not the case for everyone, right? And last thing I will say on that is that what worked for me will not necessarily work for you, and that's okay, all right? Only take what you need and resonate with from this conversation. If something doesn't really fit or it doesn't make sense, that's absolutely fine. It might work for someone else, but just allow yourself to receive whatever you need from this conversation, because we are going to go in a few different directions with this, and I'll be doing it through my own story. A little bit of context. I felt compelled to have this conversation because I'm in a place right now where I have allowed myself to be free in a lot of different ways. I think getting sober 6 years ago just opened the door for me in a multitude of ways, in ways that I could have never even imagined at the time. I didn't think that I'd be able to still have fun in my life. I didn't think that I'd still be able to connect with people in that deep and meaningful way. I gave alcohol particularly, but a lot of other drugs too. I gave it so much credit for the person that I truly am. I gave it credit for the best aspects of Africa, of my character, my identity, the things that make me, the things that make me fun, you know, the things that make me funny and witty, all of those lovely things. I gave alcohol far too much credit, which made it very difficult to unshackle myself from it for such a long time. So finally being able to get sober freed me in so many ways, because now I could finally practice who I truly was. I would say, and I've said this many times, that I kind of felt like a newborn baby. I felt like I had to ask myself the most basic questions around, what do I even enjoy? What do I like? Who do I like to spend time with? Where do I like to spend time? There was so much that I didn't know about myself. And I say that to say alcohol, being sober rather, and, you know, removing alcohol from my life has freed me in so many ways. But I'm on this path now where I'm still curious about the person that I'm becoming. I want to spot other areas where maybe I still feel inadequate, or I still feel ashamed in some way, or I'm still withholding parts of myself because I feel like those parts are going to be rejected by other people. Because I think it is important. I think it definitely is important to just have that awareness and to have that curiosity. So when it comes to my sexuality and my sex life in general and viewing myself, and by the way, when I say sexuality, I'm not talking about sexual orientation. We'll get into that a little bit later on, but I'm talking about viewing myself as a sexual being. Okay, so when I say sexuality, that's what I'm talking about, viewing myself as a sexual being, whether that is through the lens of just consciousness or through the lens of me being a woman, being a human being, through the lens of being someone's lover or being my own lover. That's the kind of thing that I'm talking about, okay? Seeing myself as a sexual being. I want to have this conversation in three parts. So I will start by just talking about my adolescence and early adulthood. So that adolescence would be from age 10 to 19 years old. And then I'll go into adulthood, 19 to 24. And then I will go into post-sobriety, so 24 onwards. And now I'm 30 years old. So I will kind of just give a reflection of 6 years into my sobriety and what my journey of sexual reclamation looks like today. For those of you that are new to me and my work and what I do, you might not know that in 2017, I started a sexual wellness company called Cherry Revolution, and it was also a global community. And the purpose and mission of this company and brand was to make shameless pleasure a priority. And it was to put a stop to faking it. The house mantra was death to faking it, because I was notorious for faking orgasms. And my business partners, who are also my very good friends at the time, they were also very notorious for faking orgasms. And we started going on this just through our coffee date conversations, our lunch conversations. We were just so curious about why that is. Why is it so normalized for girls and women to fake orgasms? We just talk about it as if it's just this inevitable thing. It's just something that is, and full stop. We sort of laugh about it. And we just had very similar upbringings, whether it was the involvement of religion, just very strict immigrant parents. There were so many things that were identical about us. But even when we spoke to people that didn't have those identity markers, faking orgasms amongst women just seemed to be something that was normalized. So when we created the company, the house mantra was death to faking it. And we created this incredible community that was so global, where conversations around sex and sexuality were had all the time. So I spent quite a few years talking about removing shame from sex, talking about my own experiences with sexual shame, etc., etc. I just don't speak about those things as much anymore, because I closed the company about a year and a half ago. I'm actually going to be starting it again in about a year, but I'll tell you all of that in the future as it happens. But I spent so long speaking about it through the lens of how we sabotage our sex lives. And it's just something that I don't speak about as much now, but it might be useful to know that these are things that I also talk about, because self-sabotage isn't just something that manifests itself in our creativity and having political conversations, or it's so much more than that. It's not just about how you might be sabotaging yourself in business or with your clients. It's so universal. And it's, I find that the most interesting conversations that can be had about self-sabotage are the things that have something to do with our interpersonal relationships and the relationships that we have with ourselves. Like many people, I didn't grow up in a sex positive household or culture. I know that some people listening to this might have had a very, very different experience, but I just didn't. Even when it came to the most basic things of knowing that my vulva is called a vulva, even my vagina being referred to in a neutral way without it feeling like it's something bad or a bad word is being said. I just didn't have any education around my body or me being a sexual being. It just was not spoken about at all. And when I say things like this, it's not me placing blame on my family or the people that raised me or even my culture necessarily. I think they also didn't receive sex education in the way that people in the West might receive it today. It just wasn't a thing. So by the time that I encountered porn when I was 10 years old, and you know, there's a very viral clip from my conversation with my friend Steven on his podcast Diary of a CEO, where I talk about this. And in some of the comments, you have people that are so enraged because in their own minds, they think, you know, that I was somewhat neglected by the people that raised me. And, you know, you have comments like blame the parents. No, it wasn't. It's not a case of blaming the parents. When I was 10 years old, it wasn't that difficult. When I was 10 years old, having have come to the UK only a year before, and all you have to do is to walk into the corner shop and go to the magazine aisle and look up to the top section, and you have porn in your eyesight. Whether you're 4 years old or 6 years old or 10 years old, that same exact sequence can take place. It's not as if it's so inaccessible. And we live in a very, very sexualized culture. A very sexualized culture. But that's a very practical example of how I first came across porn. Just going into the corner shop. And I've always been a very curious child. I've always been not only curious, but also a very snoopy child as well. So porn is something that the moment that I saw the visuals, just naked women, breasts out. Of course, you have the little on the magazines, you have the little star on the nipple. But I mean, everything is pretty much visible. By the time I saw that at such a young age, it stirred up something in me. It stirred up a curiosity, but it also stirred up arousal. And I think it can be very difficult for people to hear things like this or to want to have these conversations because it feels like an area that you just shouldn't go to. But that's not useful because children are going to feel how they feel. And if that curiosity is shut down, it makes them even more curious. It doesn't mean they stop. It doesn't mean just because you shut it down, automatically it just disappears within them. That's not what happens. It just means it can also start to turn into shame. So for me, I experienced arousal at a very young age, and I know most of us have. I mean, I have spoken to thousands of people over the years who have similar stories. So I first encountered porn in that way, but I started engaging with porn on a deeper level, probably when I was still 10 as well, or more 11, when being the snoopy kid that I was, my uncle lived with us. And I would go through his things for whatever reason. Sometimes it would be to find DVDs that we could watch, that me and my siblings could watch. And I found his porn collection. And it was not just visibly lying around. I went and found it in a place that I shouldn't even have been looking in to begin with. But that curiosity that had already been sparked up elsewhere just got deeper. And porn it's a very addictive thing. I always grapple with myself around whether I think it's an entirely bad thing or I think there are people that can watch porn, depending on what kind of porn you're watching, and be absolutely fine. I think at this moment in time, I'm doing a lot of research around it for myself, just so I can really understand certain things. But I know that for me, I became very addicted to porn at a really, really young age. And there were also those late night TV channels like Eurotrash, where you would have Eurotrash Things like Succetra. Does anyone remember Succetra? I used to love that. You would have those channels that are deep in the 900s where you would get 10-minute previews of porn, and I would just sneak back into the living room when everyone else was asleep and I would watch it. So my parents and my caregivers had no idea what I was doing. But also, because of the lack of sex education and secrecy around sexuality in general, and it stayed a secret for a very, 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 very long time. And what I hadn't realized at the time was that I was training myself to believe that porn was how people had sex. I had nowhere else to learn from. And movies, mainstream films, are no better either, because you will have two people that are, for example, kissing at the door, stumbling into the house. They're just kissing. He lifts her dress up, penetrates her straight away. There is no foreplay, nothing like that. Penetrates her straight away, and they both come together. They both orgasm together. And there's moaning. There's, you know, the big crescendo and the big finale, and they both come together. Or the man comes, and then the sex finishes. So for me, there was so much being programmed from a very, very young age that taught me that this was the way that people have sex. Sex begins with an erection and it ends with an ejaculation. That's the messaging that I picked up everywhere. And because porn was my go-to, that's the main message that you get. So by the time that I had sex, when I was 14 years old, I'd already been watching porn for some time. I'd already been watching porn for quite a while at that point. So faking orgasms was a default. It was a default. I truly believed that I was just there to pleasure the man. I was simply just there. And I wasn't... None of this is really conscious, you know, the words that I'm using right now. For me, it was not a conscious thought. And I would imagine that for most people, for most girls, for most women, it is not a conscious thought for you to think that you are simply there for the man's pleasure. In retrospect, I can understand what was happening. But at the time, I had just learned from porn. I knew, or at least thought, that I had to perform in a very specific way, that I had to moan in a specific way. My body had to look a specific way. It wasn't about how something felt. It was about how something looked. And I had to pretend that I was enjoying it, even when it was painful. Even when it was painful, I had to pretend that I was enjoying it. It wasn't even a thought for me to tell the boy or to tell the guy, adjust the position a little bit. Can we just stop? Can I have a little more foreplay? There was none of that. I just had to take what I was being given, and that was it. And I had to pretend that I was absolutely enjoying it. And once he came, then it was done. So I never experienced pleasure. Even when I look back now, I can say that I probably first truly experienced sex with someone and felt like it was completely pleasurable probably when I was about 25. Yeah, I would say that it was when I was 25 and I met my ex, and he showed me what it actually felt like to experience pleasure with someone in partner sex. Of course, when I masturbated and I played with myself, I felt pleasure. I could make myself and can make myself orgasm every single time. But in partner sex, I had never experienced an orgasm. Every single orgasm that I had was faked. And also, I don't blame any of the men that I was with. And it's taken me a long time to really come to this conclusion that I don't blame any of them. They were also performing what they had seen. I was performing what I had seen. I didn't feel like it was possible for me to say, I don't like this. Can we do more of this? This is painful. So there was no constructive feedback that I was giving them. And yes, someone could say, well, they should have paid more attention to your body language, etc. But I, to be honest, I think I was so good at performing pleasure that the person I was with would never have known that I was not having a good time. And sometimes I was probably having an okay time because I was just so used to not feeling immense pleasure that it didn't feel like I was having a terrible time. You know what I mean? When you tolerate something for so long, you don't even realize that you're tolerating it. Only when you experience something better and something different are you able to have something to compare it to. But at the time, I had nothing to compare it to. Absolutely nothing to compare it to. And also, when I was growing up, like I was saying, by the first time that I had sex, I was 14 years old and I'd been watching porn for a long time. I had trained myself to fake orgasms by default. And when I was growing up, girls that were sexually open were shamed. They were shamed. Even the ones that were perceived to be sexually open were shamed. So it was never a thought for me to want to explore my sexuality in any intentional way. And again, having that foundation of no sex positive education, not even understanding my body or, you know, not even knowing the names of parts of my body, the parts of my body that are supposed to give me pleasure and do give me pleasure. I didn't even know what they were called, had no idea what a clitoris is. And even if someone had said that word, I would have probably thought that it was a bad word. Even when someone said vagina when I was younger, it would feel like someone is saying something wrong or something disgusting. There's been so much shame that has been placed on women's sexuality. So to me, it's really no surprise that by the time that I had discovered porn, which is for the most part extremely, extremely detached from the reality of sex, that I just took a copy and paste approach. And then in my day-to-day life, when I was in school, the girls who were sexually open were shamed. So the messaging that I was getting and collecting from a very young age was that it was wrong for me as a woman, it was wrong for me as a girl to enjoy sex. But at the same time, I'm supposed to have it and to give it. There was very confusing messaging from such a young age. And it also it also didn't help that I never had boys who openly wanted me to be their girlfriend, ever. I didn't, not when I was growing up, or at least when I moved to London when I was 14 years old. But many of them made it very clear that they wanted to have sex with me. So I thought that I needed to have sex to be liked, to feel connected. And that way of thinking stayed with me for such a long time. And what breaks my heart, because I still speak to so many young girls about this, and I speak to so many women my age, younger, older, who have experienced the exact same thing, feeling like they needed to have sex in order to feel connected, or in order to feel desired or wanted or loved. So I was just set up to fail. I was set up to fail from a very young age, and it didn't help that I was drinking as much as I was. It didn't help that I had been drinking from the age of 14, and the first time that I had sex, I was pretty much in a blackout. And I trained myself to drink in that same way, but to also have sex in that same way. So it came to a point where alcohol and sex came hand in hand. I felt like I wasn't able to really have sex in the way that I wanted to. And by that, I mean to have sex confidently, to not feel insecure, to not feel self-conscious, or to be too worried about what my body is doing. I just realized that I could silence all of that by having a drink, even if it was just a sip, whether it was, more of a placebo effect or not. I just felt like alcohol was somewhat of a companion when it came to having sex. And again, that stayed with me for such a long time, because when we transition now into adulthood, when I was 19, from the age of 19 rather, sex really only happened if I was somewhat intoxicated. Otherwise, I couldn't follow through without feeling incredibly self-conscious. And this is where I say, even though this is me sharing my own story, maybe this is not even close to what you have experienced, or maybe it's pretty fucking close. My invitation, as I said before, is to just be honest about whether something is working for you or if it's working against you. Because just from what I have shared so far, you can see that I had so much evidence that was showing me that Africa, this is not fucking working. It is not working. You shouldn't feel pain when you have sex with someone, unless it's consensual pain and you know exactly what you're going to be getting, right? But this, there was nothing, there was nothing planned about the pain that I was experiencing in sex. And the fact that I felt like I needed to have sex or I couldn't say no, because there were many situations when I didn't want to, but I felt like I had to say yes. Because who was I to say no? Or if I say no, this person is not going to like me, or they're going to think that I'm uptight or whatever, fill in the blank. So when adulthood came around, even in my long-term relationship, I wasn't able to have sex confidently unless I'd had a drink. And I never spoke about sex with my partners, because the reality is that I didn't consciously know what I liked, and I felt even ashamed to even think about what I liked. So I just never spoke about it. We never spoke about it. And I found myself attracting partners who also felt shame in speaking about it. And I'm so lucky that I've been with just some of the most incredible, incredible men. But you're really shown just how sex negative our culture is, when it can be easy for people to engage with porn, but to be able to sit with someone and to honestly and through a sober lens talk about your desires and talk about the things that you want to try and to talk about the things that excite you, there's so much shame that comes with that, so much embarrassment, so much some people might even find it humiliating to talk about their desires, or being so afraid of what the other person will say. So for me, I just did the thing and just never spoke about it. Never spoke about it. But the thing that happened when I was 22 is that I met my partner and we ended up being together for three years. Was it 3-4 years? And I got sober in that relationship. He met me at a time when I was partying so much, I was drinking so much, so the sex that we were having was very much influenced by the way that I was drinking and partying, etc. My wild girl party person persona. And I got sober in that relationship. And removing the alcohol and drugs away meant removing that persona. It meant removing her sexuality and how she viewed herself as a sexual being, as, you know, a very wild, expressive person. And the woman that was left was me. It was me, the person that was filled with so much shame, the person that had no idea what they enjoyed, the person that felt guilt for some of their desires and pleasures. And it was that thing again of feeling like a newborn, of having to confront things that were so uncomfortable. When I got sober in that relationship is when I really had to realize and accept just how disconnected I was from myself as a sexual being. I was in a very loving partnership, and yet I felt like I couldn't have sex. I really didn't want to. And I was shaming myself for it. I thought something was wrong with me. And also, I think it's when you make a big life change, especially when you get sober after such a long time of trying, or after such a long time of just feeling emotionally and physically and spiritually exhausted, your libido is probably not going to be the same anyway, because you're dealing with so many things on an emotional level. So physically, you might not have, it's probably very likely that you're not going to have the same sexual drive, etc. So those were things that I was aware of. But what I realized for me, it was much deeper than that. It was because I was realizing that the sex that I had been having since I was very young was so pornified, and it was so far removed from what I actually wanted. I wanted sensuality. I wanted a gentle approach to lovemaking. I wanted to still have filthy, wild, raw, exposed sex, but to feel respected. I wanted to feel like my desire could be honored, like I could honor my partner's desires and not feel any shame and not feel any guilt. I wanted to be given the time and space that I needed to actually feel aroused, instead of just being penetrated prematurely every single time, instead of feeling like I had to have sex because there was an erection, instead of feeling like there was no time for me to get my needs met because my partner had already come. Those were the things that I truly wanted, but I couldn't articulate that. I felt as if I wasn't allowed to articulate those things. And there was no one stopping me. My partner at the time, of course, he wanted to know what was wrong. He wanted to know if he was doing something wrong. But it wasn't about that. It was something so much deeper. It was my own sexual shame. And my relationship with porn was really highlighted at that time. It was highlighted in a way that I didn't quite expect, actually. And it was that same year that I ended up starting Cherry Revolution and started having conversations around sexual shame. And I was able, it was the following year actually, but I was able to do that because I had got sober and I'd realized that me keeping this journey of sobriety to myself was not going to be helpful. I had to share everything out loud as a form of accountability, as a form of holding myself to what I say I am going to do. I had relapsed so many fucking times at that point that I was just exhausted. I was done, and I had nowhere else to turn to, which is why I started writing and created a public journal. But because I had that foundation, by the time I realized that I also had some sexual shame, I had got into the rhythm of sharing my story and expressing myself openly. So that really helped so much, because if I hadn't started Cherry Revolution, and if I didn't have Roxanne and Rukaya, my friends, who I just love so much, I don't think I would have come to a point of actually wanting to reclaim my sexuality in the way that I did. And even the term premature penetration, we hear so much, oh my goodness, we hear so much about premature ejaculation, but no one talks about premature penetration. So when I discovered that term in the book that just absolutely fucking changed my life, the book is Women's Anatomy of Arousal by Sherry Winston. When I found that book in 2017, my world just expanded and exploded in so many ways, because a lot of the shame that I had was around self-pleasure. I was just used to other people experiencing my body. I was never used to looking at my own vulva, touching myself, touching my nipples, giving myself a nipple orgasm, touching my neck in the same way someone else would, touching my lips in the same way someone else would, just touching my face and looking at myself in the mirror, and doing this practice that's called pussy gazing, which is just fantastic, where you just get a mirror, lie back, open your legs, and you just observe. right? We let other people just view us in whatever way, but we feel shame about looking at ourselves. That didn't sit well with me. That did not sit well with me. So when I found this book, Women's Anatomy of Arousal by Sherry Winston, it just blew the door wide open. And I would bring those conversations and discoveries to my friends and we would talk about it. And I realized that for me, expression just wasn't about what I was saying. You know, it was about what I was doing with my body. It was about how I hold myself, the standard that I hold myself at as a sexual being. And it wasn't even about having sex with other people. It's almost like I had to learn to become my own lover first. A lot of us need to learn to become our own lovers. We are so disconnected from ourselves sexually, but we're still engaging in sex. Because I had been engaging in sex from the age of 14, yet at 25, I was suddenly made aware of just how immensely disconnected I was from myself as a sexual being. So I went through a time, so now we're kind of talking about post-sobriety. My relationship, the relationship I was in, ended for its own reasons. And then I went on this journey of really throwing myself into tantric sex, because this book that I'm talking about, Women's Anatomy of Arousal, at its core, it's putting forward a lot of tantric teachings. And to me, it's everything that I needed. I've never been someone that calls themselves a spiritual person. I've never been someone that has explored a lot of other Eastern teachings or yoga or anything like that, especially at the time. Now, I would say there are a lot of things that I make a part of my daily practice or things that I try to be very intentional about, whether it's indigenous practices from my own country and continent. But at the time, I wasn't seeking anything specific. I just needed something that was going to help me with the sexual shame that I was feeling. So the book that I discovered led me to so many different teachings that introduced me to the world of Tantra. And I just never looked back since. I sort of set myself a little challenge to go to any sex positive workshop or event that I could find, because I didn't just want to do this work by myself in solitude and privacy, because to me, that would just lead me further into secrecy. So I wanted to be part of any community and to understand what other people were experiencing, to understand how other people had managed to work through sexual shame, to understand how people had removed themselves, you know, from the clutches of porn and found a way to have sex that they actually enjoy. I'm so lucky that I've always held on to my curiosity. You know, and I think that's exactly what I did around this time, around 2017. So I was attending a lot of sex positive events and workshops, and it was really important for me to continue sharing my journey around this, because as I just said, trying to do this alone would have just fed that secrecy that I had been holding on to for so long. So it was very important for me to continue sharing out loud in the same way that I did with my sobriety and trying to get sober. And 6 years on, which honestly, it blows my fucking mind every time that I say I've been sober for 6 years, but 6 years on, and I still do my best to stay on top of nurturing myself sexually, be it through self-pleasure, be it through openly stating my desires with partners, which is something that I just enjoy so much. Just being able to look at someone and to tell them what it is you enjoy, to tell them what excites you, to tell them what you want to try, to tell someone what you would like to do to them, what you would like to do for them, how you would like to please them. It's just my favorite thing. And it's taken a very long time. It's taken a very long time to get to this point, but it had to start with me. I had to learn myself first. I really just had to... I had to try my best to get over the discomfort and to understand myself, to really feel myself and to honor myself and to touch myself in the way that I expect someone else to, right? So for me, my sexuality is not just about having sex. It's not about the physical act itself. It's about the relationship that I have with myself as a sexual being. And if there are any two books that I could recommend for you, whether you are a woman or not, if you are someone that is just curious about sexuality, these two books are a game changer. I will give you three, actually. So there's Women's Anatomy of Arousal by Sherry Winston. I'll put them in the show notes as well. Then there is Tantric Orgasm for Women by Diana Richardson. And her husband have another book called Tantric Orgasm for Men, which is also brilliant. And all of these books, by the way, they're not just theory and, you know, abstract teachings. They are very practical, very practical. So you feel like you have assignments that you can actually test out and try by yourself or with a partner. But staying on top of nurturing yourself sexually can be a game changer. For me, when I allow myself to stay sexually open on a mindset level, on an energetical level, it allows for me to stay creative. It allows for me to stay in my fullest expression. Even with the work that you're familiar with me doing, that's very much tied to my sexuality and me removing sexual shame from myself. They can seem on the surface as if they're disconnected, as if they have nothing to do with the other, but my sobriety, my sexuality, and my voice all work together in tandem. So for me, staying on top of nurturing my sexuality is huge. And those three resources that I mentioned, I come back to, no pun intended, I come back to time and time and time and time again. Okay. And some of the things that I've also done in the past year to just allow for me to feel like I'm trying new things, you know, not just staying in the theory, but I'm actually trying new things. I went to my first ever play party last year, and I'm surprised that it was actually my first, but it was. A guy that I was seeing at the time, an incredible, incredible man, he put together a play party, and I didn't overthink it. When he asked me if I wanted to come, I just said yes. I didn't think about it too much. I didn't think about the fact that I'm going to be going to a sex party, a play party for the first time, and I'm sober. What is it going to be like? I didn't overthink it too much. I just trusted this person. I knew that it was going to be very small and very intimate and in a beautiful home and just very comfy, very cozy, beautiful people. And I said yes. And I had one of the best nights I have ever had in my entire life. And I've had a lot of them. I've had a good time in my life, but this was incredible. And I remember, I won't go into all of the details in this episode, but maybe I'll do a different episode on that in the future. But I remember leaving the party at, I think it was around 4 a.m. And I was just in my Uber smiling to myself. I had the biggest smile, like a full body smile. I was so proud of myself that I allowed myself to experience immense pleasure, and it felt good. And I felt confident about who I was and what I was doing. And I knew that my yes, anytime that I said yes to anything, it was a fully grounded yes. It was a yes spoken by someone who holds themselves so highly. My self-esteem is nothing to be played with. And I feel really good saying that, because there was a time when my self-esteem was in the fucking bin. But now it is nothing to be played with. And I'm always making sure that I'm checking in on it, because I never want to make decisions from a place of low self-esteem. So when I was in that room, when I was in that party, I just felt so good. I felt so good and I felt so loved, and I felt like I loved myself and who I was and who I was becoming, and the pleasure that I experienced and seeing my partner, seeing him experience so much pleasure as well. It was incredible. It was incredible. And I think all of those years of me investing in my self-pleasure and wanting to understand my mind, wanting to forgive myself for anything else that I've experienced before, led up to that moment of me feeling so genuinely free and very thankful that I'd given myself that opportunity to experience something that I had never even really considered. And last year, I also had my first tantric massage, which was just, oh, it was incredible. So a tantric massage is essentially an erotic massage. It was for 2.5 hours. I had this incredible woman. Oh my goodness. She was an absolute Brazilian goddess. Her name is Yolanda. Yolanda, if you're listening to this, I love you. She was incredible. Anyway, had my first tantric massage, and I hope to be getting these tantric massages for the rest of my life. I want to reach old age and continue deepening the relationship that I have with my sexuality. I want to get my tantric massages. I want to go to a tantric retreat. I want to continue going to all of the sex positive workshops and just meet people and continue exploring and just, I can't wait. I'm excited for me. I'm very excited. So yeah, that's that's everything that I wanted to share with you, because I wanted to just give more of an idea. And I mean, there's so much, but I wanted to give more of an idea of what my relationship with my sexuality has been. And yeah, it's been a journey. It's been a wild ride. And I mean, I'm only 30 years old. You know, if I get the opportunity to live until I'm 70 or 80, then, you know, I'll have many stories to tell. And I'm very excited about all of the things that I'm going to experience. And I love that I've allowed myself to not go further into the shame hole, but to actually get curious about the decisions I've made, the things I've experienced, the things that I want to try, the things that I felt like I wasn't able to say, because I'm done sabotaging myself sexually or romantically or in platonic relationships or familial relationships or anything like that. And I really have my sobriety to thank, because without getting sober, I really don't see how I could have been led to this point if I had not got sober, if I hadn't allowed myself to live life in clarity. I just don't see how I would have, most of these things would never have been revealed to me in the same way. So I'm always so grateful for my sobriety, but also, again, I've said this word 1,000 fucking times, but for the curiosity that I have. I hope I never stop being curious, you know. And there's so many people that might have assumptions about who I am and how I should be and how I should think, but that has nothing to do with me. That has absolutely nothing to do with me. My only commitment is to continue getting to know myself, and that excites me. And my other commitment alongside that is to express who I truly am, all of the layers of who I am. So in the beginning, when I was saying that there are many people that might find my work now and have no idea of all of these other things that I've done out loud or explored, it's good, because you know, through stories, you get to learn just how multidimensional and multi-layered people truly are. And I'm lucky that I have the kind of audience and listeners that are also very multi-layered people. People that, you know, maybe you fucking confuse people because of how many layers you have. And I think that can be a very beautiful thing. But a lot of you have asked me about my relationship with sex and how sex changed for me when I got sober and what sex was like when I was still drinking and doing drugs. And so this conversation is very much overdue. And again, this is not about being self-righteous. This is not me putting myself above anyone that still drinks or still parties or whatever the details might be. This is just me sharing an important, very important parts of my personal story and being honest about the things that I thought were working for me, but they weren't working for me at all. I wasn't happy when I was being sexually compulsive. I wasn't happy when I was waking up not knowing if I'd had sex with the person next to me. I wasn't happy feeling so strung out and hungover and come down, you know, and trying to grapple onto the good moments and trying to justify the way that I was living my life. I was not truly happy. So the discomfort that I felt in early sobriety or when I would relapse, I would do that over and over and over again if it meant meeting the person that I am today. I can still have just as much fun, if not more. I can still have sex and experience pleasure and still get filthy if I really want to and feel good about it because I want to do it, right? I can still be nervous and excited, and I want to feel it. I want to know what I'm feeling. I want to be able to tell. I don't want to numb anything. You know, I want to know when I'm uncomfortable around someone. I don't want to drink it away. I want to know when, you know, I feel like I've just had the best sex of my fucking life. I want to know that, you know, not feel sort of numb and, you know, have flashes of it in the morning and not be quite sure what happened. That just didn't make me happy. It just didn't fulfill me. So allow yourself to be honest about whether something is working for you or against you, and then just decide how you want to move on, right? Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I enjoyed recording it. And before you switch off, hold on. Rate this podcast. It takes you a few seconds unless you're driving, and then I'll hold you to it next time. Follow this podcast if you're not already. It does make a huge difference. And also share the episode, because I think a lot of people will need this one, because we all have some kind of relationship with sex, whether it's conscious or unconscious, we do. But a lot of good stuff can happen if you start to have that relationship on a conscious and intentional level. It's very exciting. It really is. Anyway, I will love you and leave you, and I will see you in the next episode.